Good afternoon. Good afternoon. Welcome. Welcome. The title of the talk today is Everything Belongs. I got an email from someone this week who had been on a silent retreat. It was a weekend silent retreat. And she said it was a good retreat and, you know, she enjoyed the silence. But one of the things that she noticed on the retreat was that everybody seemed so serious. She said she didn't see anybody smile the whole time. And she was just curious about that. And she said she remembered that Thich Nhat Hanh had gone to the Zen Center in Los Angeles. And some of the students were asking him, well, did he have any advice for their practice? And he said, sleep later and smile more often. And he said, you know, I'm really not a fan of intensive practice. And this gives you a little bit of flavor of Vietnamese Zen as opposed to Japanese Zen. Vietnamese Zen is just softer. You know, so when you're in Thay's presence, there's just a softness and a gentleness about his presence. This seriousness is not just limited to the Buddhist world. One of the great Protestant theologians of the last century was Karl Barth. And he famously wondered aloud, why do Christians so often look like melancholy owls? No, it's not that way in every church, I know, but I have certainly experienced that. And I've been a melancholy owl myself. I'll cop to that. So why the seriousness? Why the seriousness? And I think it has something to do with effort, with what in the Buddhist world they call efforting, like that gerund. It has to do with trying to get somewhere. You know, I'm trying to get to be, you know, fill in your blank, more compassionate, less neurotic, more generous, awakened, enlightened. Seriousness really comes with that territory, and it's a fixing mentality. It has to do with fix me, fix you. I'm trying to get somewhere other than here. I want to be there. I don't want to be here. My teacher, Philip Moffitt, said, you know, in this practice, you can't start out. I can't start out from over there. The only place that I can start is right here. So Pema Chodron has a book title, which is Start Where You Are. That's great advice. You know, our primary meditation instruction here is just to allow things to be the way they are. And the reason that's our primary instruction is that's because that's what awareness is doing. It's just allowing things to be the way they are. The insight meditation teacher, Joseph Goldstein, said that he thinks that the many years of his practice, he said he likened it to rowing a boat that's tied to the dock. You know, you're trying to get somewhere, but the harder you try, the more you're stuck. Seriousness is the occupational hazard of the practitioner. I mean, I'll cop to that. I don't know about you, but I will sure cop to that. I remember being with one of my Tibetan teachers at Spirit Rock, Sokni Rinpoche, and when Sokni would walk into the meditation hall, the place would just light up. It would just brighten up because his presence was so light. And it was light in terms of not heavy, but it was light also in terms of radiant. Do you know that line from G.K. Chesterton? He says, angels can fly because they take themselves lightly. Anagarika Munindra, who was one of the early teachers of some of the beginning insight meditation teachers, Munindra said, he was asked, why does he practice mindfulness? And Munindra said, I practice mindfulness to see the little purple flowers beside the road. I love that. There's a wonderful garden. It's a wonderful gardener in my neighborhood, a woman who's, her whole life must be her garden. She is just out there working it. It's on Carden Avenue, Judy. I wonder if you see it on your walks. And right now the peonies are coming into bloom. And, Kathy had, peonies in our garden, in our former home. And, it's just, it's such a hit for me of Kathy, to see those peonies. And, you know, when I do this little rotation in consciousness that we've been talking about for a while here, where, you know, I'm looking at the peonies, the white peonies, and they're looking back at me. Or really, what's happened is they're really linked. It's awareness and the peonies are arising at the same time. And when that happens, there's just this hit of joy. I was walking through my house this week, and the sun was just kind of slanting in. The morning sun was slanting in through the windows. And there were all these dust motes that were lit up by the light. You know how that happens with dust motes? And I don't know, maybe I was just slowed down enough. But I actually stopped and just watched the play of this. And I don't think that I'd ever really noticed before how it's like elementary particles. The mote would come into the light and it would sort of turn and be bright and then it would go back into the shadow. And it's like, oh wow, this is really, really very cool. I remember being at a summer month-long retreat with Philip Moffitt at the Forest Refuge in Western Massachusetts. And I'm just sitting outside in the morning drinking my tea, and the morning sun would be coming in and just lighting up the steam that was coming off the tea. And you know that sort of exquisite just curling of steam from a hot drink? And it was just like, oh, wow. How could you want anything more? You know, like, this is a little nirvana right here. We all know those moments. I was on a wintertime retreat at the Forest Refuge again. And in western Massachusetts in the winter, it can really get cold. In the mornings, it was about 5 degrees after breakfast. And I would go outside and I would, you know, I had the gear, I had the clothes to do this. And I would go outside and I would practice my Qigong after breakfast. And then I would take a walk. And if you walk at the Forest Refuge kind of down the hill, you come to this great lake. And I was walking along the bank of the lake, and you could hear the sound of the running water, which was flowing in the little creeks that were buried by the ice and snow. You couldn't see the water, but you knew it was there because you could hear it. You know, this southern boy had never experienced that before. I hadn't grown up in the north. I didn't know what that was like. But it was such, it was like, oh, there's more going on here than I recognized. Jack Kornfield likes to quote this Ojibwa saying, Native American saying. It goes, sometimes I find myself pitying myself, while all the while great winds are carrying me across the sky. Sometimes I go about pitying myself, while great winds are carrying me across the sky. The great wins are this greater intelligence. There is an intelligence beyond our book learning mind, what I call our university minds last week. It's a different way of knowing. And when you drop into the flow of that intelligence, that kind of underground flow like I experienced in the wintertime, when you drop into the flow of that, synchronicities begin to happen. You know this? How things just kind of show up when you need them. Like last week I talked about this friend putting this wonderful teaching of Muji, Advaita Vedanta teacher, in my hands. It's like, oh wow, that was just the perfect gift at the perfect time. You know, sometimes maybe somebody will show up in your life and they were just the right person, you know, for the right moment. Oh, this was the teaching that I needed to hear. This was the companionship that I needed to hear. Sometimes people will tell me after the talk, oh, that was just what I needed to hear. And I'll say, what'd you hear? And they'll say, well, I heard this. And I thought, really? Did I say that? But that's what they heard. A client told me about a new book. It's by Frank Ostaseski. And Christy has been studying with Frank at Upaya, at the Buddhist Chaplaincy Program there. Frank Ostaseski, along with Rachel Remen, they're probably the two most important Dharma teachers who have brought mindful care of the dying into the larger cultural conversation. And Frank has got a brand new book. It's called The Five Something. Do you know the name of this? The Five Something. I can't remember it right now. But it's a book about loss and about the dying process. And I found that as I've just read about 50 pages of it, but I found that as I was reading it, about every other page, I just broke into tears. And these were not sad tears. These were tears of relief, like, oh, thank God somebody knows this. You know? Somebody's giving voice to this. I saw a little interview with Eckhart Tolle this week, and he was talking about his boyhood and what a troubled boyhood it was. And he said when he was a boy, he was so anxious and depressed that he would see scaffolding beside buildings, and he would think about, well, what if I climbed up there and jumped off that scaffolding? That's how hard his childhood was. So some of you probably know his awakening experience. It's in the very first pages of The Power of Now. And he says he's, you know, 29 years old, and he's in this place of just, you know, it's just awful. He says he finds the world loathsome, but even more so, he finds himself loathsome. And the thought that came to him in his mind was, I just can't live with myself anymore. I just can't live with myself anymore. And he asked himself a life-changing question of inquiry. He asked, well, who is this I that can't live with myself? Because the way that sentence is structured, there's two of me, but there can't be two of me. One of them has to be unreal. And he just kind of let himself drop into that question, and that question just took him down into this void. And he said what he heard in his mind as he dropped into this void of not knowing was, resist nothing, resist nothing, resist nothing. And he said he became not aware of anything for some time. But when he came to, that light was coming through the curtains in his room, and he said he felt like all the loathsomeness in himself and in the world was just gone. It was just altogether gone. And he stayed in this blissed out place for about 6 months. I think he sat on a bench in St. James's Park in London, and he's kind of hung out here. You know, he wasn't trying to do anything or make a living off of this or anything. He was just letting his body mind absorb this experience. I was talking to a mother, and she said that her little boy has a lot of trouble with math. And lately he's taken himself to hitting himself on the head when he can't get his math problems right. And he'll say to himself, "I'm so stupid. I'm so stupid." And she said this is just breaking her heart to see her child do this. At the other end of the age spectrum, I talked to a man who's about my age, who said, you know, when I screw something up, when I get something wrong, I really hate myself. He said, but when I do something wrong and it hurts somebody else, he said, I cannot forgive myself. So we just let that, you know, kind of sit for a little bit. And I said, I don't think you're ever going to be able to forgive yourself. And he looked at me like, well, what the hell am I coming to pay you for? And I said, you know, I don't think that we're really very good at forgiving ourselves. I said, but there's another kind of intelligence. It's that intelligence that's in the Native American saying, bearing me across the sky. That knows how to forgive yourself, and I want to help you contact that intelligence. I was talking with a man who's got a startup company, and you know, for about 6 months they hadn't made any money at all. And they finally got a client, and he got an email from somebody that was asking him a question, and he felt like, oh God, this question is going to make us lose the only client we got. And he hadn't made any money in about a year, and his funds are really like, they're about gone. So this just terrified him. So he called his partner up and said, what should we do? And his partner said, the only thing we can do, tell the truth. So he emailed back this guy, and he told the truth in answer to this question. And the guy emailed back and said, oh, okay, no problem. You know, this story about Pope John the 23rd, there was a play, I can't remember its name right now. I think maybe it was called The Deputy. And it was a play about the failures of the Vatican to protect Jews in Rome at the time of World War II. And one of the Vatican functionaries came to Pope John and said, what are we going to do about this? You know, there's bad publicity out there about the Catholic Church. And Pope John said, do? What can you do with the truth? So this practice of ours is about telling the truth about what's here. And here's the two words that I want you to remember. It's the title of the talk. It's that everything belongs. Everything belongs. Your problems belong. Your injuries belong. I mean, not because you want them, but just because they're here. They are in your consciousness. They are in your awareness. There's no way you can, quote, get them out. No, they're already here.
That train has left the station. And they're here. You know, the peonies on my morning walk, they're here. The delights are here. The steam rising. The motes in the sunlight. You know, all that's here. The political situation, just as it is here. It's in our awareness. It's in our collective our awareness, our individual awareness. Muji says there's one earth, and there are about 7 billion worlds. Which is to say, we've each got our own contents in our consciousness. And what I want to invite you to do in terms of playing with the contents in your consciousness is to let them just sit side by side. So often what happens to us, I was kind of singing this song last week, so often what happens to us is that we're just lost in the contents. You know, we're just, it's just like, you know, that stuff out there, whether it's good or bad, I'm just lost in it. Dharma teachers sometimes like to say we're like Velcro. You know? Have you ever seen a scanning electron microscope picture of Velcro? You just wouldn't believe how many hooks there are in Velcro. Go home and Google this. I mean, really, it's just, it's a remarkable picture. So that's what we're like, you know. Our consciousness is just, it's got hooks for all this stuff. Nothing escapes it. Right? But what happens when we're aware of the stuff that's hooked in consciousness and the consciousness itself? When you let them exist hooked in length, and you're aware not just of the stuff that's hooked, but of the hooking consciousness, the hooking awareness. When we're aware of that, of both of those at the same time, check it out what happens in your body. So I was talking with a client this morning, and we were kind of working this territory, and he walked in and said, I've really got some big problems. Okay, so, you know, tell me about your problems. And so I said, so here are these problems, and here's this consciousness. And let's just let these rest side by side. We're not trying to do anything with it. Not trying to analyze this, you know, do the archaeological dig and find out, you know, why things are the way they are. Or some kind of cognitive therapy where you dispute your thoughts about it. I said, I don't think it's going to do it. I said, let's just let these two rest side by side. And he did it, and he sat there, and this little Buddha smile came to the corners of his mouth. And he said, wow, who knew that if you just let these things rest side by side, that there could be this kind of unhooking, this kind of liberation, this little moment of nirvana is right here, right now. And all I had to do was to step back from the contents and be aware of the awareness itself and just let them exist side by side. Oh, this is a Sufi story. Do you know this kind of Sufi wise fool called Nasruddin? He's kind of the crazy guy in Sufism. And so one day, Nasruddin goes to the bank, and he wants to get some money, and so the teller says, well, you got to show me some ID. And so Nasruddin has a little mirror in his pocket, and he looks at himself in the mirror, and he said, yep, that's me. So that's what we do too. It's like, oh, my failures. Yep, that's me. Oh, my anxieties. No. my panic. That's me. I got it together. That's me. Or I'm a, you know, fill in the blank, you know, teacher, therapist, grandfather, widower. That's me. I'm my idea of me. Is that who I really am? Am I your idea of me? Are you my idea of you? Or am I the capital you that knows this content of opinions and ideas about myself? It's the presence, the generous, open field, ever forgiving, ever compassionate presence. That's who we really are. And we just forget that. You know, we just get caught up in, oh, well, you know. Like, yep, that's me. We all do. This is not hard practice. It's really not. It's just such a subtle turning. It's just a turning away from the contents in your mind about yourself or anybody else or the world situation or whatever. And looking, oh, here's this open-hearted awareness, this open field that's just holding all of it and not trying to push anything away. This I thought, this who we take ourselves to be, it cannot reliably forgive. That's why I said to the man that I was talking to, I said, you're not going to be able to forgive yourself. Your I thought is not going to be able to do it. But this greater intelligence, this presence, this thing that's bearing us across the sky, it knows exactly what we need. And it will give us everything we need. It will. At the right time. It may not be my timing as my, like, you know, I could have used this a little sooner. But it will give us what we need at the right time. And again, I don't ask you to, like, buy into this just because I'm up here saying this. Check this out in your own experience. That's what the Buddha said. He said, don't believe anything I say. He said, check it out in your own experience. That's what I like about this practice so much, is there's no orthodoxy and there's no dogma. It's just like, what's true for you? What's true for you? So, you know, kind of where I began was Thich Nhat Hanh saying, you know, like, sleep later and smile. When you do this deal of unhooking from conscious contents in consciousness and stepping back, and then just let these contents and the awareness look at each other. Let them exist side by side. Let the sweet stuff look at you. Let the hard stuff look at you. Just let them be side by side. And the smile will come to your face. You don't have to try to smile. That's the smile of the Buddha. Why is the Buddha smiling? I mean, really, why is he smiling? Because he's not resisting anything. Because awareness, big A awareness, is not resisting anything. So I want to end with a little chant. My soul friend, Rabbi Rami Shapiro, Rami's birthday is today. He's 66, and we actually have birthdays 2 days apart. My birthday was on Monday, And we're really like brothers of another mother. I mean, we're same age and birthdays 2 days apart. And Rami was up at the Festival of Faith at Louisville this last weekend, and there is a fabulous YouTube of Rami doing the opening presentation at this Festival of Faith. And one of the things that he did was to do some Jewish chant. The chant that he used, he said the Kabbalistic teachers teach their students to chant this chant every morning. And I'll see if I can do it for you. Eloha Nishma Shana Tata Pi Tehorahi. Eloha Nishma Shana Tata Pi Tehorahi. So Rami lives in Murfreesboro, and in the morning he walks along the Stones River, and he does this chant and other chants. And the translation from the Hebrew is, "My God, the soul that you have placed in me is pure. My God, the soul that you have placed in me is pure." And it's a reminder for the faithful practitioner every morning of this purity of, you can call it soul, you can call it spirit, you can call it Buddha mind, awareness, whatever you want to call it, that is pure. It can never be stained by anything. Our small selves, our egoic conditioning, I mean, we can really do hurtful things, right? We can do unwise things. But that cannot stain this purity of soul. The soul is whole, and it is infinite. In this pure soul, everything belongs. Everything you've ever done, everything that was ever done to you, it belongs. Why? Because it's already in consciousness. It's here. And when we can realize, oh, consciousness is allowing this to be here, maybe I could step back from this little old Gordon who can't allow this to be here and who's struggling so hard, who's trying so hard to be a good Dharma student. Maybe he could just relax and step back and realize, oh, in this pure soul, there is no struggle. There's nowhere I'm trying to get. I'm already there. Because it, there, is me. It is you. Without exception. Like nobody can say, oh, that may be true for the rest of y'all, but it's not true for me. It's true for you too. The great wind is bearing you across the sky. So that's it for a moment. So it's our custom to end our practice with wishes of loving kindness and compassion. And you might think of yourself in a younger time in your life, when you can easily contact that purity that you were and are and will be. And say to that younger self, may you be filled with loving kindness and held in loving kindness. May you be calm and peaceful and safe and happy. And may you know your beauty, your purity, and be free from suffering, free for love. And then we turn it around and let this pure little soul say to us, just as we are, right here, right now, may you too be filled with loving kindness and held in loving kindness. May you be calm and peaceful and safe and happy. And may you know your purity, your beauty, your goodness, your original goodness that cannot be compromised, and be free from self-blame, self-harm. Be free for love. So we send these same wishes out to everybody in this room. Let those wishes, in your own words, just ripple out energetically to everybody sitting around you. And then send it out into the neighborhood, out into the Belmont area. And just energetically pulsing out into this part of town, your part of town, your home, people you live with, people you love. Out to Davidson County in Middle Tennessee. And everything east of the Mississippi. Rocks and trees and birds and plants and people. The waterways and the windways, everything west of the Mississippi. And the whole creation, the whole planet. Everything, everybody filled with loving kindness and held in loving kindness. Everyone calm and peaceful, safe and happy. All of us awakened to the beauty of our own true nature and free. So we dedicate the merit of our practice this afternoon to the welfare of all these beings, to the ending of suffering and to the arising of joy and happiness and peace. So what a pleasure to be with you this afternoon. Hope it hadn't been too serious. We'll be here next week. Thank you for your kind attention and your generosity in the baskets at the back. Helps us pay the rent. And hope you have a lovely week, and see you here next week. Thank you.